And away we go, Beck, for hour number two today of the big program. 16 minutes after the hour, you're tuned into the Now program here on WWGH Radio. And it is a big morning, to be sure, because right now, as everybody knows, the debate on the articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump is going on here in the United States by the Judiciary Committee in Congress. And there's so much going on right now, so much to discuss. We're just going to get right into this, and nobody better to discuss it with on this historic day than one of my favorite people. He has been on this program several times. His kindnesses are always much appreciated to me and our listening audience. And like I say, we're going to get right into it because 45 minutes is not going to be near enough time to discuss everything going on today. He has questioned presidents for a half century. He has hosted number one primetime news magazines like Primetime Live. He has been a host and a panelist on the Sunday morning talk shows like This Week with David Brinkley, and co-hosted it This Week with Sam and Cokey. He is one of the best, to be sure, and you see him occasionally these days on CNN and other places. And here, so glad to welcome to these microphones one of the best, Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you?
Well, I've been listening to this wonderful introduction. Just keep going. I mean, I think it's terrific, and a lot of it is just blowing smoke.
Yeah, I don't know about that, Sam. I don't know how much smoke was in there.
Well, where there's smoke, there's fire. And boy, is there fire today in Washington, and there will be next week when the full House takes up the votes them and will, of course, approve them. And then I guess next year we'll have a Senate trial.
Here we are today. The Judiciary Committee is debating this right now, and apparently this could go on all day. Is there any chance at this point that President Trump does not become the third president in United States history to be impeached?
You never say never, but you can't see it. Now, today what they're doing is technically called a markup. Last night, those of you in your audience who are gluttons for punishment, hours as the 41 committee members gave their positions, with the Republicans saying it's all a process and the process is cooked up by the evil Democrats. The Democrat, and here's the evidence that's in that at the end of it, nothing changed. Today what they're doing is marking it up, which means that the two articles of impeachment are being looked at and people can offer amendments. And the Republicans are sure to offer a huge number of amendments. How many thousands? I can't predict at this point. And they will be defeated because the Democrats have the majority. So at the end of the day, then the articles, which have been drafted by the Democrats, if there is an amendment or two that's accepted, fine, they will be codified, and that will be the language that the full House votes on next week.
When that happens next week, when the full House votes on this, and it does look like President Trump will be impeached, what do you think will happen in the country? We're almost at Christmas. It's the holiday season. Will it be different than it was when Bill Clinton had this happen to him?
Well, I have statistics from the time I spotted for ABC News and covered the Nixon. So I don't have the statistics in front of me for Clinton. But I'll tell you this. The Watergate burglary began in June 1972. So let's fast forward through all of the process of the courts, the Senate Watergate Committee, and the investigation by the Judiciary Committee in the House, headed by Chairman Rodino. In July of 1974, a very respected poll, the Harris poll, found that 53% of Americans, that's just a very small majority, supported the impeachment vote that was coming in the House, they thought, and only 47% supported removal in the Senate if there was a Senate trial. That is precisely the numbers you see today on President Trump. I mean, there's a small majority, according to the polls, that say, no, we want the House to impeach. But there is not yet a majority that says, we want him thrown out by the Senate. So what's the difference? Big differences between the two, of course.
Do the times make a difference? Is the internet age, the Facebook age, the fact that more Americans, over 50%, get their news from Facebook than anywhere else, affecting these numbers that didn't affect them in Clinton or Nixon's day?
Well, I think that's true. I think the people get their so-called news from many different sources, many of which, in my humble estimation, have not checked out whether they're facts or not. In fact, many of these sources, unfortunately, delight in spreading misinformation. And if you're just a typical person who's watching it, you don't have any other means of getting the news, or you're listening to it, or you are reading it, or in your Facebook, and your Facebook buddy, you're trafficking in information that has not been checked out and is not accurate. Yes, I think the times make a big difference.
It's interesting to this point, Sam, because what I have seen happen is there is a group of people who like President Trump and he's innocent. And then there's a group of people who don't like President Trump and he's guilty. Where are the opposite people? Where are the people who like President Trump but think he did something wrong, or the people who like him or dislike him but think he's okay? There's no middle ground with this president.
Well, I think you're right. If you could look into the hearts and minds of every citizen of the country who's paying even the barest of attentions, we'd find people like that. But the times now are different in other respects. Let me go back to the Nixon day. Of course, he was the president who resigned one step ahead of the sheriff. During the time that that Harris poll was taken, the evidence was basically, he said, John Dean, the former White House Nixon counsel, testified, and he used exact what he thought were quotes, what he said were quotes of Nixon cooking up a cover-up in the Senate to get money. I know where we can get $1 million to pay these burglars to keep quiet, but we had nothing but Dean's word. Now, we had other evidence, sure, when Nixon fired Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor, in the so-called Saturday Night Massacre. A lot of people said, wait a moment, if he's innocent, why could it look into him? I mean, he won't be able to find any evidence against him. So why is the president worried? I mean, we had a lot of that kind of evidentiary, circumstantial evidence, but only Dean versus Nixon until, and here's a real difference, the Supreme Court of the United States, with the Chief Justice Warren Burger, a former Republican operator, appointed by to be Chief Justice, unanimously ordered Nixon to turn over those tapes in which we might hear exactly what Nixon said. And guess what? Did Nixon say, no, I'm the president, I can do anything I want? That's what Mr. Trump has said that Article 2 says he can do anything he wants, which of course is nonsense and destructive and dangerous. No, President Nixon said he was disappointed in the court results. I respect and accept it, and have ordered our people to comply with that decision in all respects. Now, do we think that President Trump, given his, well, one of the articles, as you know, is obstruction of Congress, refusal to allow his people to testify as Constitution required by the House, properly, subpoenas, anyone, you, President's Chief of Staff, refuses to do it. There is a difference here. You can say, well, Mr. Nixon was not smart enough to refuse to comply. I don't think that. But the country's changed, Scott. You're talking about the divisions in the country and the outlook of people on both sides of this kind of divide. They want to win, whichever side they're on, regardless of the Constitution, regardless of the mores, and regardless of the principles of this country. And we are in a dangerous situation.
Yesterday, I was talking to two different people. I talked to somebody who is really not a political person, and then I talked to somebody who is very political on the Democratic side. And interestingly enough to me, they both said the same thing. I said, well, what do you think of what's going on and what's going to happen? And they both said, he will be impeached. It's going to happen. The Senate won't remove him. It's like we've already made up our minds.
Well, I think that's true to a large extent, and that's why I keep citing the evidence from the Nixon. In July, the country's very narrowly divided, but enough people want him removed that the Senate would vote to remove him. There were plenty of Republicans in the Senate, and they wouldn't have voted to remove him. But when the president complied with the court order, and we knew the words from the 17th to the 26th of 8 June, you see that the president of the United States and his chief of Sullivan, Bob Haldeman, are cooking up the cover-up. Well, you tell Gray, who was the acting FBI director, that this is a national security, not to investigate. We're talking about the burglary. And you tell Helms, the CIA, get the national security. They're cooking up a cover-up to keep the authorities, the people investigating the burglary and discovering all of these things that eventually were discovered. Well, when that happened, it was no longer John Dean versus Richard Nixon. He said. It was Nixon saying, in effect, you're right, I obstruct. And so now to the White House, famously, came Barry Goldwater, the grand man of the Republican Party, Hugh Scott, who was the majority leader for the Republicans, and he was a minority leader, but he was the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, John Rhodes, the leader of the Republicans from the House, to tell Mr. Nixon he would be convicted. Because here's the difference. When the Republicans accepted evidence, the president's own words, that he obstructed justice, they didn't try to stand in the way. They said, I don't care. I don't care what he did. He's our guy. And these evil Democrats, what are they doing to him? No, they said he's guilty. And as you know, even before the words were heard, before the Supreme Court had ordered the tapes turned over, six Republicans, actually it was seven because one didn't vote on one article and didn't vote on the other article. Seven Republicans in the House Judiciary Committee voted aye, meaning four articles of impeachment. Now, how many Republicans do you guess will vote tomorrow, let us say, on the articles of impeachment in the House? Could be one, could be two. A couple of guys are not going to run again, and they think that in the sense of history, they'd like to understand that, well, we don't have a smoking gun called a tape. We have a smoking gun called a transcript. President Trump has urged us all to read the transcript that he himself, his White House, has put out of his July 27th phone call with President Zelensky. And if you read the transcript, he's, do us a favor. And what's the favor he wants? Investigate the Bidens. Well, that is the evidence that the Democrats are trying to present, and with a lot of others, but that's the main thing. That's the John Dean. That's it. Only it's not John Dean, it's Richard Nixon. No, it's Donald J. Trump. From his own look at his transcript that he released, he's saying, I need your favor to get dirt on my potential political opponent in the next election here. Okay. So a Republican said, okay, and we now see he's probably guilty, so I can't. No. In different times, it's tribal. It's tribal. My tribe against your tribe. My guy against his, and I don't care whether he's guilty or not. We're going to win. What a destructive thing for the United States of America, not since the Civil War, with a possible run-up of the Vietnam War, but the Civil War, have we seen Americans against each other, regardless of the evidence.
Sam, and this is the important thing, what does this do in the long run? If we know that the president did something illegal and his party will not remove him because he's our guy, as you say, and even though they know that he did something illegal, what does this say to every other president, Democrat or Republican or otherwise, for the rest of the time this country is around?
Well, I guess it would say that it's okay. Anything goes, whatever you think. Might makes right. If I've got the might on my side, then, you know, the guns, I don't mean, I'm not predicting now Brandon Lee appearing again for physical warfare. But I guess that's what it says. But remember, pardon me, this is not over. We are going to have an election. If I can survive this, we're going to have an election next year. I was always with Nancy Pelosi from the standpoint of
process would probably go nowhere because of what we've just been discussing. No need to repeat the attitudes that are hardened in this country. But an election, if we can make it a fair election, everyone who has the right to vote gets to vote, I think we can remove Donald J. Trump from the presidency and say to the people that, not the people who vote for him because they thought he would, you know, help them in one way or another, but say to the people who voted for him because they don't want those Mexicans here. And those people, I think, say to them, you're not going to run the country. You're not going to have someone in the White House who says, I can do anything I want. You be good citizens. You have all the rights and privileges I have, or you have, or any of your listeners, but you're not going to prevail. I wanted the election, and I think it will next year, to make that point.
Sam, you were there when Bill Clinton was going through this. What are the major differences between that and this?
Well, ultimately, I think people have to accept that Bill Clinton perjured himself. That's a crime. Ordinary Americans go to jail for having lied under oath in a judicial improper proceeding. Now, why do I say you have to accept it? Well, he was not convicted by the Senate, and he was not removed from office. And one of the articles, of course, was perjury. But at the last day of his presidency, the special counsel, Robert Ray, who had taken the place of the counsel who, of course, did not succeed in making the case in reporting to Congress, Robert Ray told the White House, if the president does not acknowledge that he committed perjury, the moment he's out of office, I will bring him before a grand jury. He will come before a civil court, be judged by his peers. I believe we have the evidence here to convict him. And then it will be up to the court and the sentencing to decide his fate. And so on the last day, and ladies and gentlemen of your radio audience, please don't take my word for it. Go to the internet, search the documents, and you will find the White House for in the name of the President of the United States, in which he acknowledged that he had, quote, given false testimony under oath, close quote, which is the definition of perjury. Now, the difference is, you said, well, hey, how come he wasn't removed and all that? Didn't they know that, you know, in the Senate and all of this? Yeah, I think a lot of them did in the heart of hearts. I know I'm going on too long, but let me tell you one other story. Cokie Roberts, my dear love, Cokie Roberts, my mother deceased, my best gal, was Cokie, and we worked together in harmony for so many years. 2 weeks before the vote in the Senate on William Jefferson Clinton, Robert Byrd, the senior senator from West Virginia, how are you going to vote, Senator Byrd? He's a Democrat, Byrd is. And here are his words, which I've emblazed in the front lobe of my mind. Quote, of course he committed perjury. I mean, whom doubts that? But the people seem to like him. I don't think they want him removed, and I don't know how I'm going to vote. And 2 weeks later, Byrd voted no, because he's right. Impeachment is not a criminal court in which Robert Ray would bring a president or anyone to the rules of the court and all that. Impeachment is a political process. Those numbers from the Harris poll I've quoted, or from the polls today, if not a large majority of Americans want President Trump removed, he will not be removed. And within the heart of hearts of a Mitch McConnell or other Republican senators, they're not stupid, they're not dumb, but they're defending that guy. And unless there's enough overwhelming evidence to convince Americans that he is guilty of these things that the Republicans in the House say he's not, then he will be removed. It's as simple as that.
Is there any chance that if things go as the way people think they are going to go, impeachment will happen, trial in the Senate will happen, President Trump will not be removed, that on the last day of President Trump's presidency, that somebody might come to him and say, we are going to put you in front of a grand jury because we do think you did what you did. Because the difference here, Sam, which is so confusing to a lot of people, if he did what we think he did, because we have the transcript and all the testimonies that we've seen in the last few weeks, if he did do it and the Senate says, well, but we're not going to remove him from office, can he still face charges that are criminal in regard to this?
Yes, of course he can. There would be one circumstance in which he wouldn't have to, at least not the federal charges. We'll get to the state of New York if you want a little later on. But the point is this. If he should be removed by the Senate, and I am not predicting that, President Pence then has the power to pardon him. President Pence can pardon him, just as Gerald Ford, President Ford, pardoned Richard Nixon. That is the reason why he was not taken to court. So that is one of the reasons, I must confess it. I don't have have charity in my heart on this matter. That's one of the reasons I do not want him convicted by the Senate. I want him to serve out his term. I want an election to be held. I believe he'll be removed by the voters. And then, yes, he will be brought before a civil court, of course. Now, and then it'll be the evidence there either convicts him or acquits him. I'm not going to judge a trial. I'm simply going to say he will face the court.
The charges in the Southern District are interesting because it's my understanding, and maybe this is just how I have it, that the charges that will be brought before him in the Southern District, which are almost a no-brainer the moment he's not president, he cannot be pardoned for by any president because they are unpardonable because they're on the state level. How serious are these charges in New York?
Well, first of all, not being a lawyer or not being a constitutional expert, that is what most lawyers say that have spoken to this subject, just what you said, that cannot be pardoned by a president who has the only power of pardon that we're talking about for state charges. All right, the charges are serious. I mean, they haven't been lodged yet, but the evidence that the state attorney general talks about, that's serious. I mean, people, again, go to jail for conviction of things like that all the time.
Did the Democrats make a mistake from the standpoint that the moment President Trump won the election, they talked about the emoluments clause, they talk about him making money by having people come to his golf resort, they talked about the Russia probe, which went on for a long time, and now we're at this point, and they're saying, well, the Democrats are the boy who cried wolf, and we're just not buying it now when we're this close to an election. Is that a problem with the Democrats?
Well, I've said to you, I think it was a mistake. See, but I understand why Nancy Pelosi decided to change her view, and then at least her caucus was demanding it and going ahead with impeachment. Because of what we've discussed, the country and the majority of the people in the country do not feel the same way about charges and about things as we did during the Nixon era. And, of course, during the Clinton era. Because while people understand when the president had to face a grand jury, Mr. Clinton did, and have to confess, yes, there have been 9 occasions when there had been this contact with this physical contact with the White House intern, Monica Lewinsky. People understood then that he'd been lying about it. He perjured himself before the court, before the judge that Saturday morning when he was surprised with the information and asked, did you have a sexual contact with this, and what is the meaning of is, and he stumbled around it. He perjured himself. But everyone understood this was about sex, they thought, not perjury. And which one of us wants door opened on our entire sexual life? I mean, so people were kind of schemish about, besides, we were having a pretty good economy in those days. The Republicans from the Senate, led by a Republican from my native state of New Mexico, Pete Domenici, and made a deal with the budget office in the Clinton White House to make a deal on the future budgets for the next four, and that was just one of the reasons, not the only reasons, why we had a surplus for 4 years of the last Clinton administration. We didn't have, we could have $1 trillion, $1 trillion deficit again this fiscal year, and that's why we had a surplus of several billion dollars. And so why do you want the guy removed? Why? Because I'm not agreeing with what he did. I think it was terrible. Thank goodness it wasn't my daughter and all, what have you. But, and of course, this good economy we're still experiencing today, having recovered from 2007 and 8, is booing President Trump. If he doesn't completely ruin it with his trade wars, that will be something that people will consider.
Does it matter just the fact that he will be the third president ever impeached? Is history going to say something about that?
Well, I guess each case is different. I mean, Andrew Johnson and of course, Richard Nixon wasn't impeached. Before the House got to vote on the articles of impeachment for the Judiciary Committee, he skipped town. So actually, only Johnson and you're right, three, Clinton was impeached. I'm so fixated on the differences between the Nixon process, which I covered the Clinton, too, in the sense I was the White House correspondent. But being the Watergate correspondent with Nixon, I covered the trial of the burglars, in which John J. Sirica, Maximum John, the judge, said, "You guys come clean. I mean, I'm not stupid." Six guys, basically Cuban immigrants, down in Miami, they decide to go into the office of the Democratic Party national chairman. What, you're looking for cash? Maybe has a couple hundred. No. You come clean, and they did. One of them did. And then the Senate Watergate Committee, and then, of course, Peter Rodino, this ward congressman from New Jersey, just kind of an average guy, rose to greatness in the sense of being able to hold his committee together. And through a very careful deliberative process, present enough evidence that even before the smoking tape, six Republicans, seven, one of them switched back and forth, seven voted for articles of impeachment. It was a remarkable feat. So that's why I concentrate on that.
If it happens the way that we all think it will happen, and it goes to the Senate in early 2020, and we don't know what the outcome will be, even though people have a feeling how it will all come out, what are we expected to see in 2020? What's going to happen in the Senate? What's a trial there going
well,
to look
like? Here's what we look. Here's where Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats of the House and Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, agree. They want a speedy, quick trial in the Senate, get it over with, and let's get on with our business of elections. Now, you can see Nancy Pelosi's point. It's going nowhere. The longer we are getting and spending, kind of waste our powers on the impeachment process, the Senate, the trial, and all that, the election, from organizing our people, from getting that vote out, and what have you. All right. Now, what's Mitch McConnell's? Why would he want a speedy trial? Because the president is calling, I want all the witnesses, I want the Bidens called, I want this, that, and the other. Because McConnell knows. The president seems to think that he's not going to be convicted, fine. But he seems to think he will win an overwhelming victory by showing up, the Democrats, with all of their witnesses. Because we're not just calling people in the Senate who will support Donald J. Trump. If Mitch McConnell were to agree to a long trial in which both sides must call their witnesses, and we get once again the powerful witnesses, the ambassadors, the government servants who had no axe to grind as partisans against Trump, he thinks the country will just think he's won a victory. This poor guy doesn't understand, and McConnell does. Let's not go through that anymore. Get yourself acquitted. Declare your victory and say the Senate has spoken, and let's move on. So that's McConnell's thing. He's smart enough to know that a long trial with a long, drawn-out number of witnesses replaying what Donald J. Trump has done, and these witnesses will not be confined to just the narrow article of that phone call. They'll talk about cages for children on the border of Mexico. They'll talk about throwing these young DACA children who grew up in this country out. They'll talk about everything they want to talk about that they say shows that Donald J. Trump is not fit to be president of the United States. He thinks that's wonderful. Gosh.
When this all comes to pass, and when we go to the Senate, and this is all finished up, and possibly the quick trial does happen, we do have an election. Now, this is something we haven't had coming out of an impeachment, or even Richard Nixon's case. We were not headed toward an election for Richard Nixon. We're right in the thick of it now. There are going to be caucuses. There are going to be primaries happening very early next year, possibly while this trial is going on in the Senate. Who does this hurt? When it's 51%, Quinnipiac poll says 51% don't want him impeached, 49% do. Who does it hurt? Does it hurt anybody? Does anybody helped by it? What happens?
Well, the conventional wisdom, and I kind of subscribe to it, is that it hurts the Democrats not to be able, the ones who are running for their party's nomination, not to be able to spend all their time. The people who are in the Senate, Amy Klobuchar, for instance, a couple of others dropped out, but it hurts them. They either have to pay attention to their job of hearing the evidence in the Senate, or they have to be on the campaign trail, the fish fries and the bar mitzvahs and all the places where you want to try to get votes. The general sense of where the country is focused, those people who are focused on what's going on, is hurt from the standpoint of, let's look at the election. So I sort of agree with both sides, Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi. Have a quick trial, hear the evidence against the president, and any of the people that Mitch McConnell says, yes, bring them forward, and then the Chief Justice presides, and let's have a vote. You know, Article 1, aye, no. Article 2, aye, no. Whoop, we don't have two-thirds, so you are acquitted, Mr. President.
When the Founding Fathers set this country up with this process that we have in the House and the Senate for impeachment and removal of a president, did they have in mind a political process, which I was getting up this morning and people were talking about it on the news. Chris Christie very clearly said, you have to understand, this is not a legal process, this is a political process.
Yes. They had that precisely in mind. Why did they do? Well, we know. And again, I do not claim to be the great student of history that I know other people are. But I know enough to know that if you read certain ones of the Federalist Papers, in which Madison, particularly, and others, gave their reasons. Because if you read the Constitution, with very rare exceptions, it just says this, 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 but it doesn't tell you why they wanted this, 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 this. But in the case of impeachment, it's clear. They knew there'd be an election. All right, every 4 years there would be an election for the presidency. But it did occur to them that during the time of that 4 years, someone who had been elected and held the office might start doing things that were terrible for the country, and particularly things which would interfere, and this is true, find it, with the electoral process. Because the electoral process, they thought, was a magnificent thing, and that would save us from a bad president. We throw him out. But what if we had a bad president, and he's got 4 years, or 3 years, or 2 years, or well, even 1 year, and the damage to the country would be immeasurable. So they created, from an old English wordage, the process of being able to remove a president through the one we've talked about, impeachment in the House, trial in the Senate, for high crimes or misdemeanors. And that's anything. You know, what's a high crime? Well, we know that. Perjury, for instance. What's a misdemeanor? Jaywalking? Yeah, okay. In other words, whatever the House decided was a reason to remove the president, it got to decide that. There were no standards. There was no courtroom, wait a moment, the rules of evidence say this, that, and the other. Judge, I object. You know, no, none of that. It is a political process, and what you're saying to the country is, the majority of the House, we think this president needs to be removed now. We're going to have an election saved, but now. And again, as we've discussed it in the Senate, if the majority of the country, a vast majority, not 51%, not 53%, but a large majority, I would say well over 65% of the country or more, says, you're right, we don't want him there, then he's out. And if it doesn't, then he stays. And we both agree, I think, or at least I do, and some of the people you say have also been in your program, that we're not going to have 20 Republicans, assuming the Democrats all hold, and Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, you know, I'm going to look at the evidence, which is fine to do, because in West Virginia, for a Democrat to hold office, it's a remarkable thing. It's a species of, it's like, hey, this is unusual. Let's put this guy's picture in the wall. In any event, if all the Democrats were to hold in the Senate, they would have to have 20 Republicans agree with them and vote against the president. And I don't see 20 Republicans. You say, well, do you think these, there are 20 people in the Senate who are Republican senators who in their heart of hearts, they know, they know he was trying to get Zelensky, the president of the Ukraine, to dig up dirt on the Bidens and withholding the money from that had been appropriated by Congress for more arms for the Ukraine and a noble office visit. They know he did that. But they're not going to vote to convict him. I'm sorry.
When we look at the testimony that was given in the House over the last few weeks, there were some heavy days there. There was some heavy testimony. Our congressman in this district, Jim Jordan, was a part of a lot of that. Did any of that make any kind of a difference? Was there any big moment in any of that?
I got a lot of that. You were cutting out. Maybe it's my, I have to use a cell phone. Maybe it's my cell phone or not, but hold it. What about Jim Jordan? Do I think he did what?
Yeah, Jim Jordan, who is...
Oh, he did.
Yeah, he's our congressman here in this district, Jim Jordan. He was a part of everything that was going on in the House there when we had the witnesses being called. Was there any moment in that that was a watershed moment that will affect the trial that's in the Senate?
No, I get your question. And again, if you're looking at the Watergate Committee or the public testimony in the Judiciary Committee toward the end... First of all, President Nixon did not try to say that, no, you subpoenaed my guys, but they can't go. No, they all go. They all go. John Mitchell, the Attorney General, and Haldeman, as Chief of Staff, and Ehrlichman, and John Dean, of course, and many others. They all testified. And I do not remember there every day in the Senate Watergate Committee. I do not recall any, well, I don't recall anyone coming without his jacket on, with all due apologies to Jim Jordan. This is a different time, I know. We wear our dungarees and our fake Levi Strauss pants that have already been ripped by the manufacturer, so we look like we're really regular people. And I don't recall people calling each other names. And I don't recall people denouncing the other party en masse. Oh, the Democrats are terrible. The Republicans are just, you know, enemies of the people. That did not happen. Lowell Weicker, who was one of the Republicans on the Watergate Committee, the White House dubbed him the excitable kid because he kept, you know, saying things that were against President Nixon. He later became, you know, the governor of Connecticut. And the chief Republican who was the vice chairman, Howard Baker from Tennessee, Everett Dirksen's son-in-law, Everett Dirksen being the Republican leader in the Senate in the 60s, he was a gentleman. He sincerely believed for a long time, until, again, the end, that President Nixon probably did not do all these things that John Dean said. And so he kept asking, the question is, what did the president, in other words, did he start out to knowing that the burglars were his people? I may use the word antiquated today. Both sides were gentlemen. Again, referring to some of the things we've seen recently. I don't recall someone throwing their hands in the air, almost screaming, denouncing the other side. But remember what we've seen here. The Republicans, they're not dumb. They don't argue the evidence. They argue the process. And the Democrats are on a witch hunt, and they always wanted to spend out. The moment they got the majority in the House, that's when it really began and all that. No, it wasn't. Nancy Pelosi held their people back until we saw that transcript of the phone call from trying to keep them from mounting the young people, particularly before four young ladies and all of that, mounting an impeachment process. But the Republicans don't. You know the old saying that the lawyers use. If you're a lawyer defending your client and you have the law on your side, you argue the law. And if you don't really have the law, but you have the evidence, you have the information, you argue the evidence. And if you have neither, you pound the table. And what we've seen, people throwing their arms around, shouting, screaming, is pounding the table. Instead of saying, all right, let's look at that phone call and let's examine those words. And here is our belief that what he was doing was not really asking for an investigation of the Bidens. He sincerely believed that corruption in Ukraine, never mind corruption in Russia, never mind corruption in France, never mind, it was Ukraine's corruption that we had to look at. Because he sincerely believed, that you don't have to believe it, that there was a server from the Democratic Committee that had been removed to Ukraine, and he was buying the Soviet misinformation that it was Ukraine that was disrupting our 2016 election, not Vladimir Putin. This is a nice guy. Why would you even say that? So instead of arguing that the president really was trying to help Ukraine remove the corruption, and there had been this business about the Biden son. The Biden son was paid $50,000 a year to be on that board. Yes, he was. It was a mistake. But was it illegal? Was he part of a corrupt thing? Where's the evidence? No evidence. Don't have the evidence.
There are two.
I mean, besides for going on and on, but no. It's just, I watched this. I shouldn't call it a circus. It's our process underway. I was there at a time when the process was not the main thing. It was the evidence argued, not the process.
And that's the question. Two questions I want to get in here, Sam, because I think they're important. When we look, if we take it out, if we take the process out, and we go to the evidence, there are good people in America, the American citizens, who will vote, who make up their mind for whatever reason on whatever they believe. Okay, if we look at this, did President Trump do a quid pro quo? Did he say, I'm going to withhold the money unless you investigate the Bidens and Biden's son? Did the president break a law? Do we know that with absolute certainty now that he broke the law?
Read the transcript. Listen to the testimony of the Ambassador Taylor and even of his man, the EU ambassador, who was asked that question and passing messages back and forth. Talked to the president one day on his cell phone from a lunch cafe. Oh, thank you for the security of a cell phone. No one can listen. Oh, yes, they do. Vladimir was right on the other end listening to all that. If you look at all of that, then you make up your mind. And you either say, that's all bogus, and the transcript is wrong, or else it doesn't mean anything. Or you say, yeah, I know, but I still want my guy in. And you vote and make up your mind. If you're American and don't have the vote, you'll have the vote next November. Then you vote. Both sides will vote massively, I believe.
Well, this becomes the most important question then, and you're the best person to answer it, having covered Nixon, having covered Clinton when things like this went on. If the president did break the law and he is not removed from office for it and not punished in any way for it during this process, is it just, well, that mean old Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats were out to get him, and that's how history reads on this thing? Or 20, 30 years from now, how do we look back on this? How is it looked upon?
I don't know, but I believe Martin Luther King is right. The great arc of history moves towards freedom, he was talking about, and I think it moves toward truth. We know about Andrew Johnson. We know about that now, today. You know, we know about Nixon, too. And even Clinton, although it's only been, 20, 25 years or so. We will know about Donald J. Trump, no matter who says he's a bad man and who says he's a good man today. History will figure it out. They figured out dictators of the 20th century who were far more repugnant than anyone we've seen here.
Sam, one parting question before we wrap up today. I just wanted to get your thoughts. Why is Michael Bloomberg getting in the Democratic primary and spending all this money?
But he thinks he sees his last chance. He's looked twice before at possibly running. First as a Republican, and now then as a Democrat, he was wise. He couldn't do it against the Clinton and Obama thing. All right, it's his last chance. He's getting older. He's got a lot of money. He wants to be president. That's a fine thing to want to do. And so he's spending $30 million initially to see if he can't be. I don't think he has a chance. I'm not saying I wouldn't vote for him. I don't know. But I am saying that the structure of two parties at the moment and the partisanship of the country is such, I think, forecloses his ability to win.
Is Biden still the guy to beat in the Democratic primary?
Oh, heck. I'm not going to name her, but I was with a Democratic congresswoman recently who's prominent in the party. Not Nancy Pelosi, not a leader. But she said, I think we have all the evidence against him, but we don't have a candidate, meaning the party still hasn't decided whether to throw the long ball with Elizabeth Warren. Hey, let's have medical care for everyone immediately and abolish all the student loans and all of that stuff, or make progress on the left but slowly improve the, Biden is the guy who's been doing that, but all of his weaknesses, I say poor guy, respect Joe Biden very much, but he displays his weaknesses almost every day. I forget things, but I'm not running. Thank goodness for the country. But I'll tell you this. See how smart I am? There will be a nominee of the Democratic Party. I don't know who. That nominee had better have the party come behind him or her, as it didn't in 1968. Gene McCarthy got his nose out of joint, and instead of backing Hubert Humphrey, the moment that terrible convention in Chicago with its tear gas was over, he went back to the Senate in his office and sat there and sulked. And 2 weeks before the election, he issued a piece of paper saying, in effect, well, okay, vote for Hubert rather than Richard Nixon, but I don't have my heart in it. Well, the Democratic Party better have its heart in whoever it nominates and get behind him. Or President Trump takes the oath of office once again.
What an interesting year 2020 is going to be, and nobody better to have on this morning than Sam Donaldson. Sam, it is always my absolute pleasure.
I know you're out of time, but I want to apologize for one thing. My tone of voice, instead of being dispassionate in everything I've said, the viewers and listeners, sorry, the listeners know that my mind is made up. It's true. But I'm no longer an acting working reporter, in which case I would not have had a tone of voice that I had on your show. But I always enjoy being with you, Scott.
Sam, you're the best. And I hope you can come back in the future because I think it's only going to get more interesting as time goes on.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Sam. Bye-bye. Legendary Sam Donaldson. Can't beat that. Charlie Evers coming up 10 to 12 and Glenn Coble 12 to 1 with Swap Shop. Don't miss it. And Adam the Computer Guy today 2 to 3 right here on WWGH Radio.
Email Meadows Lawn Care 43302@gmail.com. Creating unique environments. Book Meadows Lawn Care.